Welcome to the 76th episode of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movies podcast where we talk all things movies. Tonight we're reviewing the brand new Spider-Man film, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which if your reaction was, why do we need more Spider-Man, you may be pleasantly surprised, because we got some fun things to talk about with this movie. It's animated, so that's different. Got a new Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and you got Phil Lord and Chris Miller producing, so that's unique. We've been gone for quite some time. It's weird.
Yeah, so we have.
My name's Cameron Salina. Welcome back, Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
Hello. We apologize.
Yeah.
We had a lot going on.
So much.
You know, in the time that we've been gone, Kevin Hart was announced as the Oscars host and then was resigned. Like, we've had so much happen. That's just like, wow.
I didn't even know about this.
So many other things have happened of like so much bigger significance in the world.
Yeah, I just chose to pick up the Kevin Hart.
Hey, this is a movie podcast where we talk all things movie.
It's fair. Yeah, it's fair. I apologize.
Jake, what did you want me to talk about? Like politics or something?
I don't know. It's fine. We can move on. We're moving on.
All right.
Just like Kevin Hart moved on from the Oscars.
What I did there. Okay. There we go. Making it all connected. In that time that we've been gone, though, the Avengers Endgame trailer was released, as well as the title for the fourth Avengers film being announced. And it's a simple question, but was the hype around the title and trailer worth it? Was it worth the wait?
Well, no.
I mean, it's definitely not a bad title. It's a perfectly fine title.
Here's the thing. This is like the most overhyped movie and like expected movie ever, because the first half of this two-part movie had like one of the biggest cliffhangers ever, and it's the biggest cinematic universe ever. And so I don't think like they could have done anything to satisfy people, if we're being honest. They also didn't do a great job of like setting themselves up for success with this by teasing the name as much as they did, and like someone even said that the name was never even said in the film. That's bullcrap. So
that's a pretty big line in the film.
Yeah, like everything they could have done wrong, they did wrong. But also, I don't think it really could have gone great. People would have overanalyzed the trailer, been disappointed by the trailer. I was a little disappointed by the trailer, but I'm also glad that they're literally giving us nothing. It's literally just like, here's some footage. The movie exists. It's coming out. Deal with it. I kind
of
dig that.
Yeah, it's really more of a hype video than a trailer.
Yeah.
Which is perfectly fine, because that's what this should be.
Right. I'm pretty sure that everything we saw is probably from like the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. I think it hits all the notes it's supposed to, all the notes that it needs to. It's got the flash of humor, the action, but it also has the sadness. Some reason, I guess now that he's not an outlaw anymore, Cap shaved his beard. I don't know what that's about. Somebody made a bad choice.
It's a great move. It's like if Henry Cavill, midway through Mission Impossible, had just decided to shave his mustache.
Yeah, right?
Bad call.
Yeah. Well, just because it's two parts doesn't mean you can change your facial hair halfway through. Unbelievable.
Maybe feels like he's like such a soldier mentality, and he has a routine and everything. And he's like, I tried the beard and everybody died. So clearly it's the
bad luck
fault.
Beard. That's that's on the beard. So
the first opening scene is him just like casually slipping away to shave it. And someone walks in.
I'll be right
just
back. Like in Wakanda. Hasn't even left Wakanda yet. Still shaving the beard.
That would be such a great scene.
Oh man,
that's
so,
what I want.
So for the title, they didn't necessarily prove why it couldn't have been Infinity War Part 2. That would have been a perfectly fine title.
Yeah,
I think they're wanting to differentiate the films, because I think the whole plan initially, when it was like they were going to film them all at once, much like how they did like the Lord of the Rings movies. Like one day you could be filming one film, the next day you're filming the second one, or something, and then they ended up, they filmed them back to back, but to where you were never like one day doing one and then flipping back to the other, because they want them to feel like two very separate films. And so I think from that standpoint, it's like, okay, if we just say have different titles, it would feel somewhat different. But Yeah, also, I don't know.
I think I would have liked it better if it was called Avengers, We're in the Endgame.
Yeah, maybe. It would feel more like Borat in that title, though.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine. I might have been happier if this was just like no shots whatsoever, just like words on a screen and a couple of like pieces of dialogue. Like, I don't need anything from this. I'm going to go see it. And so is every other person. Like, you could literally show us nothing and you're still going to make $1 billion. And
the trailer just should have been a montage of everyone turning into dust.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been interesting. It's one of those things, though, that I think Marvel's at this point where they're like, we'll literally lie to you, show you something in a weird image to frame it one way when it's going to be something different if it means that you're fooled when you go into the movie. Like, I think Marvel's so consumed with this idea of wanting to give us the best cinematic experience that they'll do anything to get there.
I mean, on Infinity War, everything was so segmented that only a handful of people knew the full story and outcome anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the actors only saw their lines. It's kind of crazy. I assume it's the same way for Endgame as well.
Yeah. I think there are only, I don't know if anybody had the full script for Infinity War, but I know that there were several people that they gave completely wrong scripts to. Like, I know for like Mark Ruffalo and Tom Holland, there was like three different movies floating around at one point with their lines, but it would have a completely different story outside of their lines.
That's because when Mark Ruffalo,
Christopher Nolan thing to do.
That's because right. When Mark Ruffalo, as he proved on Fallon recently, when he's had alcohol, he will literally just say anything.
Did he give something up in Fallon?
He told plot.
When they were doing the circuit for the movie, he just like started going, he was like obviously drunk and was just talking about everything, whatever.
All right, so moving on, it's been a year since Star Wars The Last Jedi, the most polarizing Star Wars film, came out, and it's kind of gone around Twitter, people, you know, giving their 1 year later, it's still this, or it's I feel this way now. And so I'm just kind of curious, you know, 1 year after this, I know that we were all very high on this movie coming out of it last December. Are you guys still high on it? Or is it kind of something that's like, it's cooled a little bit, but it's still pretty good?
Yeah, I've seen it twice now, I think. Seen it once in the theater, once at home. And yeah, it's still awesome. It still has some of the greatest shots, some of the greatest scenes in the series history. It follows along within the series, but subverts some things as well. I just listened to the, not really on purpose, but the last couple of days I listened to the DGA Director's Cut podcast with Rian Johnson on this. He's interviewed by Spike Jonze, overall the podcast isn't actually that interesting. But just hearing him kind of talk about a little bit about his thoughts going into it was really cool. Specifically talking, he kind of addressed the Rey issue that everyone has, where he felt like the most interesting thing about Rey would be if she's not anyone at all. The hardest thing for her to deal with would be if she's not anyone at all. And I thought that was, you know, one of the main complaints of the movie was how that was dealt with. Like, that was a really simple explanation for why he did. But yeah, I love it. I still think it's
when a Star Wars movie comes out, it's going to make big ripples, big waves. You know, it's like one of the biggest cultural things that can happen. And so I'm definitely like cooler on it as a whole in the sense of like the mental real estate it has in my brain. You know, I've watched it once in the theater, once at home. But in terms of it being a good film, I definitely think it's a good film. I think it stands up. I don't understand all the criticisms of it. I don't get it. People are stupid. It's whatever. It's fine. We've established that multiple times on this podcast. But yeah, it's still fantastic. I would put it probably in my top five of Star Wars films. Yeah, overall, still a big fan.
For me, it's gotten so much better. I saw it two or three times in theaters, and I've probably seen it a handful more times at home. And I think this movie is the best version of what we could have gotten from a Star Wars film in like this modern era of Star Wars. Like, I don't think, and it's kind of sad because I don't like it's it, for me at least, it's unfair for JJ because now it's like, I don't think episode 9 can get much better than this. Everything that like we thought was going to happen, Rian Johnson subverted and changed, but still like made it appealing and enjoyable. All these ideas we had of who Rey was or who, what Kylo Ren was going to do. It's like, none of that mattered, but the answers that we got were still satisfying. I also still think this movie has like two of the best sequences in any Star Wars film ever. I think the like red battle room scene with when they, spoiler, been a year, when they kill Snoke and they fight the Red Guards, the Praetorian Guards, is like next level Star Wars action. And then obviously the Holdo maneuver is pretty incredible. But for me, I really like, I've tried thinking about this. I really think it's like the third best Star Wars movie, and it's close as far as like breaking into the top two for me, at least. It's obviously the original and Empire Strikes Back. And then I think this, yeah, that's all we have for that. Let's go ahead and get into our review of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the new Sony animated Spider-Man movie that tells the story of Miles Morales, a kid from Brooklyn, as he learns how to become Peter Parker, or not Peter Parker, but as he learns to become Spider-Man. With the help of Peter Parker and a couple of other spider people. I don't know how we're going to classify the alternate dimension spider people, but...
Spider beings?
Yeah. Spider beings. There we go. Ooh. Spider beings. The new classification of humans. Or pigs, depending on who you're talking about. All right, let's go ahead and talk general thoughts. Trevor, open us up.
So yeah, this movie is a lot of fun. It is definitely a Phil Lord script. It's very funny, very enjoyable. The animation, which we'll talk more about, is some really interesting stuff. Really groundbreaking. I think, for me, where this movie has an issue is that it's sort of caught in between being an adaptation and being an homage. And I think it kind of oscillates back and forth between those two things. And, I wish it had chosen one side or the other. But I mean, I loved it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's got great music. It's got a lot of colors, so many colors, all of the colors, and got really good voice performances, a really good kind of mass media, large introduction to kind of, I think, one of the significant heroes in the next wave for Marvel. I think some things are going to be changing time. And I think that Miles Morales is at the forefront of that. So really cool to see. Yeah, this is maybe Sony's best Spider-Man. If you don't count Homecoming. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I went into this movie with a lot of hype. Like I was expecting it to be amazing, you know? And I was fortunately not let down at all. This movie was awesome. I loved it. I laughed so much. The script is fantastic. The animation style is out of this world. Like, who would have thought Sony Animated Pictures would have brought us the best animated film of the year? Sony Animation. What have they done? Nothing.
Yeah.
That's not true. But like, it's just, this is fantastic. The animation style is literally revolutionary. They created an entirely new form of animation. The cinematography is honestly some of the best of the year. Like, there are some shots here that will take your breath away. The use of depth and also the comic book style, the voice acting is fantastic. The cast does a great job. The plot is fun. Like I said before, it's really funny. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, that's my first initial thoughts. It's fantastic.
I went into this movie with a lot of hype. Obviously, just the buzz about it has been pretty enormous. And as I think we're all pretty big Spider-Man fans just from like a character and from comic books and just growing up. So growing up with that, I think this is like the Spider-Man movie that I've always wanted to see. I think I probably said that last summer when we saw Spider-Man Homecoming that like, this is the best Spider-Man movie. This is the movie I've been waiting for. And I think this movie takes that even further. It's colorful. It's bright. It has so much emotion and heart, and it captures so many things of who Spider-Man is as a kid. I mean, but like even more so than that, it's funny because I found myself so much relating to the Jake Johnson older Peter Parker with the kind of like dad bod aesthetic type thing. So sweatpants. I was like, oh, that's closer to where I am than the younger teenager. That's interesting. So yeah, I think it's a great movie. I think it's not only the best animated movie of the year, I think it's the best superhero movie of the year. And I say that confidently with Black Panther in that mix. I just think what it's able to do story-wise, animation-wise, character development is next level. And this is one of those movies that I can't recommend enough to people. It's just a blast beginning to end. We've all kind of talked about it, though. I mean, I think animation is the first thing that you notice, obviously. Visually, it's just so different and unique. It's crispier, poppier. There's this almost like 3D effect on the blurred out section. So were there ever times when it was distracting? Like, did it take a second for your eyes to adjust and then you got into it? Or was it just like instantly your mind was blown, you were ready to go?
I loved it. No, I mean, I immediately was in it and I had no trouble adjusting to it. Maybe that was just me, but no, I thought it totally worked.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool most of the time. There were a couple of times, I can't think of specific things, where I got a little bit overwhelmed by how many colors there were, where it's just so much. But I really like it. It's a really interesting thing. It's actually sort of rare now. Since Pixar kind of revolutionized, that we get something that's really, really fresh and different in animated films. And I thought this was really cool. This is going to shock you guys. I almost want to watch this in 3D now just to see what it's
like. Yeah, I kind of want to as well.
I haven't said that about any movie.
Yeah.
Avatar.
I think the only movie I've ever said that about was Hugo, and Hugo was actually pretty great. Or Life of Pi and Hugo, I think, were the two. From what I was able to read online, they did some like interesting things behind the scenes. They took certain frame rates and played with those and wrote like some new algorithms to where everything looks a little bit like punchier, and like there's not as much motion blur between things, to where you're getting that like almost like page to page comic view, as if you're, the way they described it was more like, you know, if you have one of those flip books where you kind of run your finger along the bottom of it and something animates, that's what they were kind of going for, of like that effect, but with the visuals of a, you know, traditional comic book where you have the dots on the, like on different textures to give you perspective of like depth and light. And so there's all these things that they did it's like, wow, how come nobody's ever thought of that? That play perfectly. Like, if you were to put this in Finding Nemo, it wouldn't work. But yeah. I mean, luckily it's like they did it with the perfect movie. Like everything they did was perfect for a comic book. And it's one of those things that just adds so much to the story and to the aesthetic of it. I mean, there's just visuals, and we can get into this later. But there's things that we get in this movie, like visually, that it's like we would never touch on in a live action movie for Spider-Man. So I want to talk a little bit about like where this film succeeds as a superhero film that other superhero films need to pay attention to. Like, what is it about this movie from a superhero perspective that is unique?
Big question.
By being self-referential, I think it takes something that we've seen before and kind of flips it on its head with the superhero origin story. It also decides that it's not a movie about a superhero origin story, not really. Like, you pretty much know everything you're going to know about Miles in the first 15 or 20 minutes. Then, I mean, he obviously grows throughout the film, but it doesn't feel like an origin story, even though that's sort of what it is. And I think that kind of playing with that origin story formula is what sets it apart from other films. Because, you know, like, in a lot of ways, you know, the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, like Thor, Captain America, the first Avenger, these are all kind of the same movie over and over again. And this, I guess by putting in multiple Spider-Man characters, this is able to do the same thing in effect, but not in the way that you expected.
I agree. I think for me, the thing that just like I kept thinking about during this is like, how can they make this work and they can't make Justice League work, or like Batman versus Superman? Like the plot and the characters and what's happening on the screen right now is so ridiculous, and it works so well. How is this working compared to like, and how can Justice League fail so bad?
Well, because I think so much of it is like, you're focused on letting us know who this person is as a person. Like, if I know nothing about them as a superhero, but I know a lot about them as a person, like their family dynamic, their friends, what their social life looks like who they are internally, that's going to draw me, at least for me personally, in. And that's, it's, we say all the time about Bruce Wayne, but it's like Bruce Wayne's way more interesting than Batman, but it's the same here. It's Miles Morales, Peter Parker, is way more interesting than Spider-Man because of, you know, that's who they bring to that suit. It's, you know, Peter Parker is that, like, and especially I feel like this is highlighted in Spider-Man Homecoming, in that, like, he is just us. He's us that somehow got superpowers and then started doing all these things. But it's, he starts out as just like an everyday person. He's not some like tech billionaire or someone with a super soldier serum in them. It's, he's just a kid from Brooklyn.
Yeah, and that's very much this story as well. Like that's what's great about the original Spider-Man, but you definitely feel it in this one. I think like they super hit home, like anybody can be Spider-Man, which is a little cheesy. Like, we can't all be Spider-Man, guys. Let's be real.
Look, if a pig can be Spider-Man, that's Peter Parker.
That's true. But I do love, like, the character that they brought to each of the characters through not only the animation, but the voice acting and, like, the production design and the costuming. And, I mean, all of those departments, like, still exist, even though this is an animated film, within, like, the creative design role of the film. Animated is kind of weird, but like all of those worlds still exist, and like they have to be important parts to building those characters, and that's what makes it feel authentic and real. And this movie just knocks it out of the park. Like every character actually feels like they're coming from their own unique dimension, and Miles Morales feels fresh as Spider-Man, where we've already seen How many Spider-Man movies have we had in the last 10 years? Like six Spider-Man movies, or like movies with Spider-Man in them?
There's been six total.
Yeah. And
well,
somehow,
six, not counting like Avengers.
Yeah. And yet still like Miles Morales and as Spider-Man feels like super, super fresh because they totally like took him in a totally different direction than Peter Parker. Not only like is the character different, but the medium in which we are seeing him and being introduced to him and telling his story is different. And so it doesn't feel right. So recycled.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right, Jake. This feels like a completely, not even just like obviously visually, but even just like New York, this feels like we're seeing a completely different world. We're introduced to this whole new kid and this new perspective. And that brings a lot to the table. Did you guys, and maybe this is just me, but the whole, like, I knew that Jake Johnson of New Girl fame from playing Nick was the voice of Peter Parker. But the whole little, like, 10, 15 minutes before his Peter Parker, is this spoilery? Talk about, like, that there's multiple Peter Parkers?
We'll just say we're in spoilers now.
We're in spoilers. Go see the movie if you are one of the few people who hasn't, because this movie broke records for December box office, which is hard to believe when you consider the other films that have... Oh, no, it's broke animation records. That's right. Okay, so spoilers. There's multiple Peter Parkers. Did you guys spend the first little bit of the film being like, I'm pretty sure that's not Jake Johnson's voice, but I can't place who it is?
Yeah, I was very confused. Jake Johnson being Spider-Man or Peter Parker was one of the things I was really excited about with this movie. And I was like, I don't think this is quite right. and then I finally realized, because once I heard him, you know, I knew it was him, obviously. Which he's a great, like, his Peter Parker is basically the character Nick from New Girl as Spider-Man. Yeah. And he just plays that so well. Like, you can just feel every part of that in his voice. Just the constant disappointment is conveyed so perfectly.
Were you guys able to place the voice of that initial Peter Parker?
I wasn't, and I was shocked when I heard who it was.
Me too. I couldn't figure out who it was, and then I saw it on IMDb, and I was like, what? No.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, see it again just to listen for that.
Yeah.
Well, we have to reveal who it is now.
It blew my mind that it was Chris Pine, of all people. It was one of those things, like, once I, like, found out, I'm like, that makes sense, but how is that not, like, a bigger deal? And I get that they probably want to, like, it'd be confusing to be like, Chris Pine and Jake Johnson are Peter Parker, when Jake Johnson's Peter Parker for the majority of the movie, but still, it's like, you got Chris Pine in a movie, you better advertise that, because I will go see a movie just for Chris Pine.
So this brings up a pretty significant point that is kind of almost hilariously glossed over, is that they killed Peter Parker in a film in which he's the main character in the main universe.
Yeah.
Like, that's not something we've seen in these kind of films before. I don't know if there's going to be a string of these or what they're going to do with this universe they've set up, but that's a pretty interesting thing to do.
Isn't that the next happens one is in early. Miles Morales' universe, though?
Yeah, that's kind of how it kicks off. This is like, trying to remember Miles Morales' origin story. I know that we're in spoilers, so once again, I know that his uncle being Prowler plays a big role in it, because that was like the hype around Donald Glover playing Aaron Davis in Homecoming, was that it's like, that's Prowler. And there's a couple of other things like that were pretty in like, true to that comic, but that's like Peter Parker dying was one of them. I can't remember if he dies because of Kingpin, but man, what did you guys think of the animation of Kingpin? We haven't really talked about that part of it.
That's the worst thing in this movie. It was
you think so?
Yeah, I think it was completely unnecessary. It really took me out of everything he was in.
I loved the shots where it was like just a head and then like black on the rest of the screen.
Oh, I loved
That's the kind of thing I was talking about where this film, I loved this movie and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. What kept it from being like truly great for me is that it couldn't decide whether it was kind of a homage spoof or an actual legitimate storytelling adaptation. Like it was like stuck between a real superhero movie and the Lego Batman movie, which I love the Lego Batman movie. But it's not trying to do the same kind of thing that, you know, The Dark Knight is.
Right. It's funny that you talk about how much you love the Lego movie, Trevor, because did you know there's going to be a Playmobil movie?
What?
You guys know what Playmobil is?
Yeah, I'm firmly against
it. Is there
really? Yeah. Lord and Miller.
There was a trailer released today.
And no.
No, I'm dead serious. Go look it up after we record. Playmobil movie trailer.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Lord and Miller did the Lego Batman movie, and it was a lot of fun. It was a great homage to all things good and ridiculous about Batman. But I just felt like this film dipped into that a little bit too much. I don't know, and the Kingpin thing was part of it. I mean, that's you guys talk about why you liked it.
For me at least, it's like one of those things of, you know, in watching like Daredevil on Netflix. You get Vincent D'Onofrio, however you say his last name, playing Kingpin. And he does a great job, but it's very like a real world grounded. And this is like, at least in the comics, like Kingpin was a huge, massive dude. And so like, this is what I go back to of like, you could not pull that off in a live action movie. It would look terrible, but in a comic book movie, you can almost like, you can push that boundary pretty hard. And so I like that, like, knowing that and knowing that, like, okay, we can mess with this. This is, like, the only time we can actually do this. let's go for it. I think that was like a choice that I thought was a pretty bold and ambitious choice that for me at least paid off. Like it was never took away from anything on screen for me.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about animated films is what you're able to do with the characters and like to push them in a way visually that is just, I don't know, absurd, but it like physically expresses who they are as a character. Basically the internal attributes become more external, more obviously in animated films. And so that's, I loved it. And it worked with the animated style for me. I didn't find it distracting. I thought it entertaining. I definitely like laughed the first time I saw him. I was like, ha, that's clearly Kingpin. And this is clearly hyperbole. And I love it. So,
right.
I don't necessarily disagree with anything that you guys said. I just didn't like it.
But I mean, in a film with a pig named Peter Porker, a black and white Spider-Man, an anime Spider-Man, that was like middle of the line as far as weirdness goes.
I want to know more about Peter Porker's universe. I don't feel like that was adequately. So is he from like the Looney Tunes universe, basically? Is that what's going on there?
So Peter Porker,
there are no rules of physics or anything.
No, I'm trying to remember. It's like he was like, oh, I can't. It's like he was actually like the first, like one of the very, like of the ones that appeared in the movie. I think he was the first actual Spider-Man of like these alternate ones. He was like, I can't remember. I think he's like he was a spider that got bit by a radioactive pig and then became Peter Porker. Or something like that.
His first appearance was in November 1983.
Yeah.
Comic.
Amazing.
Yeah, Peter Porker, born a spider, simply named Peter, then was bit by a radioactive pig. Yeah.
Also in it looks like his first appearance is with a Hulk that's a rabbit and a Captain America that's a fox, maybe?
Oh my goodness. I have to go buy. I'll be right back. I have to go buy this comic.
Yeah, it's called Marvel Tales, starring known as the Spectacular Spider Hand.
Incredible.
This is all so good.
What characters had you guys had experience with before this? Or did you like know about? Because I knew about most of them, but I didn't know anything about Penny Parker, whatever her name is.
I didn't know Penny, but like I know Gwen Stacy and like her side of Spider-Gwen, I think is like her comic book name. I've read Spider-Man Noir and I knew very little about Peter Porker.
My speaking of Spider-Man Noir, one, that was Nick Cage. I had no idea.
Yep, he's in everything.
He's in everything. He now is two characters in the Marvel Universe.
Who else is he?
And he's Ghost Rider.
Oh, that doesn't like count like Marvel.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if you guys watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's like a new Ghost Rider. There's actually several. So I don't want to like get into it, but
okay. All right. Other thing is I think that was the highlight of the animation was the way that this noir character was integrated in. It wasn't just that they made him in black and white, but they really gave him that noir feel anytime he was in motion or on screen. I thought it was really cool.
Oh yeah. And him,
they kind of did that with everybody,
Rubik's Cube. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was great.
That was,
I'm taking
such
this with
a
me.
Good bit.
But it was like, I think I'm trying to remember, but it's like everybody kind of had their own like movement animation. Like Penny had her own kind of style, like Peter had his own.
Right,
Peter
it was
Porker.
Like full anime when she was right. Like fighting and stuff.
Yeah, like they all seamlessly like integrated. Like yeah, there was never a time where I was like, ugh, what is, well, that looks so off. It was like, oh no, this all looks normal.
My only times that I didn't love the animation was just that there was too much of everything at the same time. I don't think anything was done poorly. But yeah, I loved it. Really cool. Really cool.
What are you guys' thoughts kind of on like Miles's arc? Is he, because it's obviously a different arc than Peter. He doesn't have, well, he has an uncle that dies, but it's different. I mean, there's a lot that's changed to it. Is it still, does it still capture that like youth element and that, growing up everyday kind of character that you, you know, come to expect kind of out of a Peter Parker character?
I loved it. I mean, I thought his arc is similar but different in a way that makes him unique, but also the tragic origin story of Spider-Man is what makes Spider-Man so interesting, or kind of like is a key part of who Spider-Man is, and that's why all of the characters have something like that in their origin stories. And so I liked that his origin story was unique to him as a person, but also establishes like the sacrifice and the stakes of his universe and what it takes for him to be Spider-Man.
We've talked a lot about this movie as a whole. There's that whole end sequence. And what I want to focus on is, you know, that end sequence could never happen in a live action movie. You have like him flipping through different color backgrounds and like cars and fighting, but like at the same time it feels very real and grounded. I mean, were there ever times where like you guys were super detached from this movie because it was an animation, or did they do a good job of making everything seem grounded and bringing you invested into the story to where that end battle really gave you that, I mean, for lack of a better term, but like that punch that you need at the end of a movie?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I thought it was a great way to kind of show, you know, like all of these dimensions intersecting and all of these things happening at one time. Which, like you said, is something that comic books like to do a lot, those kind of things, kind of getting that feel. But it's hard to do in a live action film because it's, you know, just effects or something. But the way this works is really cool. And I thought it did a really great job of kind of showing the stakes of really showing what was that, like the different dimensions intersecting with each other, all of that kind of stuff was really cool.
Yeah. I also loved the way that like they made Miles's universe. Cause when they introduced Doc Ock, I was like, oh wow. Like you don't really understand that Miles's universe isn't our universe.
Right.
I think. Mm-hmm. They did such an interesting job of that I really appreciated. So is Peter B. Parker's universe the universe of Spider-Man that we've grown up with? Like, is that what they're saying?
I think Peter A. Parker, like the Jake Johnson one, is the one that we've grown up with, to the point where it was like they almost had Tobey Maguire voice Jake Johnson, or voice Chris Pine's role. So maybe you're right, Jake. Maybe Chris or Peter B. Parker is ours. I thought with the intro and everything, it seemed more like Peter A. Parker.
See, Jake this Johnson is getting one. Confusing.
Yeah. Jake also, Johnson and Chris Pine.
I don't think this is Earth 616, which is the standard Marvel continuity.
Well, there but you
it,
go.
I, that's what I would say. I haven't done any research into this.
Well, did you guys stay for the after the credits?
No, I didn't know there was something. Now I'm kind of mad.
I didn't either. But can we first, before we talk post-credits, can we just acknowledge how incredible of a job that the filmmakers did on this of like not beating us over the head with the origin story and also having fun and like making fun of like how ridiculous Spider-Man has become in a part of our culture.
So great.
Oh, yeah. Man, just... They just took this with literally the perfect tone. Like enough seriousness to have stakes, but also enough lightheartedness to like keep it fun and original and make fun of the character. And I think that's like,
right.
We don't need to have the DCU Marvel argument or whatever, but I think that's something that sets apart the universes a lot, is that like Marvel clearly wants you to have fun with their characters and they want to have fun with them too. And that is what we see in this film, is like they're willing to make fun of the stupidity of the past, and look forward to the brightness of the future with characters like Miles Morales. And so we got them mocking the Tobey Maguire dance scene from Spider-Man 3. And I laughed so hard at that. Yeah, just some incredible shade was thrown in this movie.
Yeah. But there's also, like, there's so many, like, little bits and gags that are so good. Like, when he's in Times Square and there's, like, the Bridesmaids knockoff that says, like, baby something. There's the fact that, like...
I don't know if you guys noticed, but I think it was Peter B. Parker. Is that Jake Johnson's character?
Mm-hmm.
The universe he was from had a Coca-Cola sign in Times Square, and Miles's did not. It was like a similarly branded thing, but it started with a K. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe and that then, is a like, clue when you... that the Jake Johnson character is the main continuity.
Then when you went into Aaron Davis Prowler, his uncle's apartment, it's an animated episode of Community playing with Donald
what?
Glover.
No.
Yeah.
No, seriously?
Yeah. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I did
That's
not
great.
Notice
yeah.
that. I did notice the Chance the Rapper poster with a 4 instead of a 3 on
yeah.
his hat.
Yeah. Yeah. Which kind of, you know, if you're a Chance fan, breaks the continuity of his album covers, but, you know, it's fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
Maybe it's another clue that that's the alternate universe, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he goes from looking up to looking down instead of from looking down, looking up. Switch that. Looking up to looking down. To look. Okay, never mind. We don't need to get into Chance the Rapper album covers. Yeah, so let's talk. I mean, any closing thoughts before we get to our ratings?
Man, I just want to delve a little bit more into the animation side.
Okay.
What was your guys' favorite part of the animation? For me, it was, we've already talked about like the comic bookiness and the lighting and everything. My favorite was the texture on the skin. Did you guys notice that? Like,
yeah,
that was so unique and such a subtle touch that really made it look different. Like I kept catching my attention. The textures on the skins really helped. And then also they were doing a lot of this doubling effect to where like in the first couple minutes I was like, oh, am I in a 3D screening and I don't have glasses? You know, mm-hmm. like they were doing that for like depth of field. So instead of like yeah. blurring out the background, it would be like a doubled like opacity layer difference of the object. That was super different. And I really thought that was cool. What were your guys' favorite things on the animation?
I loved the not just the comic book lookingness of it, but just the insertion of the thought bubbles and speech bubbles just at the right time to be yeah. hilarious. I thought that was done really well. Just the timing of it and then the look of it where it would be, you know, kind of maybe in the background of something or just in the corner, that kind of thing. I thought that was all handled really well.
I think for me, it's like they were able to, when I think about Spider-Man, it's like, I think every kid does this and maybe some adults, I've done it. I don't want to out myself on that, but it's like you visualize like, man, if I was in Peter Parker, what would I do? Like, would I go to the tallest building and just kind of free fall? But it's like they visually captured so much of like, this like nerdy thought of like, man, what would I do as Peter Parker? Of like the shot of him falling upward into the skyline of him just like free falling. Mm-hmm. And then like this like crazy free falling part where he's just like spinning wildly. It's like, that's like the stuff that you dream of. And so I think that like they captured this feeling of Spider-Man more than anything of just like you couldn't really do that with the live action movie, but it's like with an animated movie. And I know I've said this so many times, but it's like, it's why I love shows like Avatar The Last Airbender. It's like a movie version of that's never going to capture visually what the show did. And it's the same here. It's like a movie, a live action version of this movie will never be able to capture everything that this did because you can just do so much more with animation. And it's such a beautiful gift to be able to do that, that I love that they just like went for it and were like, what's the craziest thing you can think of Spider-Man doing? Let's animate it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. I thought it was awesome. And then what'd you guys think about the soundtrack / score?
I listened to it twice today. Does that tell you?
It is so good.
It's really
I like
good.
It. I put it up there. I mean, like,
I mean, it's only the second best rap based soundtrack of the year, but it's still really good.
I might like it better than Black Panther, honestly.
I think there are certain songs I like better than Black Panther, but like Home, the Vince Staples song that's at the end. And as much, you know, crap as it gets, Sunflower by Post Malone and Swae Lee is kind of catchy.
Jam. It's a jam, man.
It is kind of a jam.
I found myself at the end, like that part where he's singing it early on in the movie. I found myself doing that in my office today, not even thinking about it. And all of a sudden I was like, exactly. Trevor nailed it. Jake, any standout songs to you that you loved on that soundtrack?
Let me pull up Spotify here and give you actual names. I'm
tell
terrible.
You what, Jaden Smith keeps surprising me.
Dude,
he's got
album,
good songs.
His album last year was fantastic.
He's got a new one that he just put out, and there's a song on it called Soho. It's really good.
No, he's got some talent. I mean, I love the whole album. Start a Riot is a banger in the most Tom Haverford style. And also Elevate. Elevate is also a banger.
Elevate is great.
Yeah,
Scared of the Dark too. Scared of the Dark is pretty good.
Scared of the Dark is a banger. Amine, I like him. He's a young and up and coming artist. He Invincible, that's a banger. And then also Sunflower. I mean, that little melody is such a great little hook of like it's stuck in my head.
Got that. It's got that like Paper Planes vibe to it.
Yes. Oh yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
So the performance Blackway on What's Up Danger is very old Childish Gambino.
Mm-hmm.
It has that kind of vibe, that like camp / mixtape vibe from his early days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I love everything about this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, do you guys, is there anything like plot wise that's an issue for you guys?
No.
Like, do you think he figured out how to use his powers too easily? Like any of that stuff?
No, it was almost like he struggled with it for too long. Yeah. Like, okay. He struggles to figure out, like, and I love that, like, they didn't take the easy way out and be like, he's just another Peter Parker. Like, no, Miles Morales has two special powers that normal Spider-Man characters don't. They dig into that, and it's this whole, like, I know it's cheesy, but it's, like, the part where it's, like, you know, don't focus on being me, focus on being you. Like, what makes you Spider-Man? And that's just, like, it's just such a, like, as a dad... It's like, that's, I want like Ollie to go watch this.
It also works great as a kid's movie. Really good kids theme, kid-centric themes.
What did you guys think of, the Aunt May, like, spider layer thing?
That was like, the Aunt May is actually Alfred. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically what it was. They had like the spider jeep and stuff.
Yeah. That fight scene in her house was insane.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
The only thing missing was Aunt May from the original Spider-Man yelling, "Deliver us! Deliver us!"
Oh my gosh.
William Dafoe screaming at her, goodness. "Finish it!"
I've completely forgot about that sequence. That's so bad.
Dude,
I try and block that out.
I randomly think of that scene like once a month. Every time I hear the Lord's Prayer, I think of it, which
every
is terrible.
Every time you hear the Lord's Prayer.
Oh, I don't know why. I just pictured Jake now, like, bowed head praying, saying that, and then all of a sudden, like, deliver us comes up, and Jake just kind of like poking up to be like, anybody else get it?
Deliver us. Yeah. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's not really anything about this movie I don't like.
Wait, so real quick,
I'm happy
taking
one of these once a year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Some universe research. I say universal as in having to. With universes, not as in I searched the entire universe. Some universal research. Spider-Man, or Miles Morales, is from the Ultimate Spider-Man imprint, which was a kind of alternate universe series Marvel started a few years ago, called Earth 1610. But as of the Secret Wars storyline a couple years ago, that universe no longer exists, but some of its parts were merged into the main universe, Earth 616, including Miles Morales. So in the comic book continuity, Miles Morales started in a different universe, but is now in the main Marvel continuity.
Okay.
Okay.
So there you have it.
There, that's comic book logic for you right there.
So I will say it seems that this movie did not lose people with its multiverses.
No.
As one,
I think
might
it did a great job
to.
Of explaining that.
I think it did as well. But it's kind of heady stuff. Stuff that gets kind of made fun of as being things that only work in comic books. But I think it handled it really well. You're right, Cam. It explained everything really well.
I loved how it was like people were guessing what was happening. Like, are you really alive? This happening? Are you actually from another dimension? And blah blah blah. And our dimensions crossed over, and you're here like temporary. Like, I loved
that
how
was just a guess.
Yeah, I loved how they leaned into that. Like how now everyone is just like assuming that's what it is. Like logically, like oh yeah, this is logically happening. Absolutely, of course, no one's surprised by this at all.
I think the key to explaining the multiverse thing, and this is sort of weird, but I think the key is showing that shot of the comic books stacking on top of each other. I think that really puts it all into a perspective. Gives you a chance to kind of formulate it that way in your brain.
Alrighty, well, let's get to our final thoughts and ratings for this movie. Jake, let's get started.
My rule is I can't give an A+ without a second viewing. So I'm going to give this an A, but I loved it. I mean, everything about it. I can't stop thinking about the visuals, like the cinematography, the lighting, the animation style, all the different styles coming together, the visual gags with. I mean, it's just like a perfect visual movie. And it's probably the best superhero movie of the year, like by a long shot, in my opinion. So, highly recommend, for sure an A, probably an A+. Trevor.
I guess I'm a little bit lower on it than you guys. I really liked it, though. It was a lot of fun. Definitely want to see it again. I feel like I now need to see it again because of how much you guys more than me. I didn't dislike it at all. But yeah, really fun. Not as good as Black Panther for me if we're going to go down that road. But funny, great time, good story, good morals, good intro to a character. I give it 6 spider beings out of the 7 spider beings that we got to see in this movie.
That's a good assessment. I'm with Jake. It's an A for me. It's my favorite superhero movie of the year, favorite animated movie of the year. Will probably be a top 5 when we do our end of the year lists. Just great movie that I can't wait to watch multiple times in the future. So, all right, let's go ahead and get to our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
Okay, well, we already talked about one of mine. It is the soundtrack for this movie because it is awesome. As we discussed, so check that out, definitely. And I also want to talk about another music thing for a second. I've talked about Brandi Carlile before in this podcast. I found out, I guess 2 weeks later, because no one cares about the Grammys anymore, that she has been nominated for 6 Grammys for her most recent album, which is surprising because it's like Madonna music. But I want to point this out to everyone. Brandi Carlile, the album By the Way I Forgive You, nominated for Album of the Year at the Grammys, and the song Joke, nominated for Song of the Year at the Grammys. Both very good cast.
Nice. For me, my recommend is also the soundtrack from this film because it is fantastic. But also, I think I already recommended this, but it fits better in this week, so I'm going to re-recommend it again. The Marvel Spider-Man game for PlayStation 4. I mean, I think this movie and that game are the best Spider-Man experiences you're going to get besides Spider-Man Homecoming. But yeah, I mean, incredible. And also, Easter egg in this movie was all of the suits that were in the Spider Lair or all the suits from the Spider-Man game that you can have. So,
was there like a Black Panther suit? Did I see that?
It's a stealth suit, Trevor. Okay. Get with it. Come on.
There was another one that
game,
looked like
you'd know.
Oh yeah, see, I don't have a PS4.
So if you wanna know what all those suits do and have probably the second best Spider-Man experience you could ever have, play that game. It's amazing. And listen to the soundtrack while you do it. And oh my gosh, it would be so hype. It'd be lit, fam. Okay.
Okay.
So sorry.
Way to go, Jake. All right. The word lit was used on tonight's podcast, so here we are. All right. I feel like I did this last year at this time of year. I always love watching all 7 of the Office Christmas episodes.
Yeah.
Especially if you're somebody who's watched The Office before, just watch each individual episode. It's crazy what happens between them. So like season 2's Christmas party, season 3's a Benihana Christmas, season 5's Moroccan Christmas, season 6 is the Secret Santa, season 7's Classy Christmas, which is the one where Dwight finally gets his revenge on Jim. Season 8 is the Christmas Wishes one, and then season 9, Dwight Christmas. So, some great episodes in there.
Belshtickle is here.
Impish or admirable. Yeah, that's a highlight every year. That's one of my must-do Christmas things, so... That's all we have for this week's episode, though. We'll be back next week with a new review of something. There's a lot coming out, to be honest. There's Aquaman, there's Bumblebee, there's Mary Poppins. And then there's, you know, we didn't even mention Roma tonight. And the fact that you can watch it on Netflix now, which is supposed to be the best movie of the year, according to multiple critics' end of the year rewards. So we'll have a review of something next week. If you've enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review us, go and share us with your friends and family. If you want to know more about us, you can go to our website at popcornoptional.com. If you want to interact with us, best place to do that would be on Twitter at popcornoptional. My name is Cameron Slanina. You can find me online at 321CameTime. Wow, I butchered that. Jake, where can we find you online?
You can find me at jakebrown.tv. That's my website and my Instagram. Got a lot of cool stuff coming. We shot a movie this past weekend, so that's pretty cool. Really excited about it. Trevor.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Until next time, we hope you have a great week. Watch some movies, and in the words of Michael Scott, we'll be back ASAP as possible.
Goodbye.
Later, y'all.